Election season is once again right around the corner, and there's plenty of action as political figures on all sides position themselves for a successful month. Today, I talk with two of them, Kevin Favor, and this is The Weekly. No, The Weekly is not turning into the bi-monthly. I decided to take some much-needed time to myself and to my family after the end of my brief presidential term. But today, if it wasn't obvious, I'm glad to announce that we're back to bringing you the news, and maybe, if we're lucky, making a little bit of news. Today we're off to a good start. Two new parties have formed in the run-up to the February state election. I first sit down with former Congressman Moongai to talk about the new Workers' Party and their strategy for success out of the gate. Don't worry, we'll hear from the Pirate Party soon. My second guest is D.C. Attorney General Draven, who is running for governor of Puerto Rico and dropping indictments on a host of former officials, including his opponent in that race. I hope you enjoy. Former Congressman Moongai, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So I wanted to have you on today basically to talk about the new party that you've been a part of starting, the Workers' Party. Can you just start by describing what it is for people who haven't really heard of all the press releases?
So essentially, our goal is to be generally socialist party that cares for workers first and filled a vaguely leftist niche that they're in.
Okay. Why did you and other members of leadership feel that you needed something separate from the existing SDP and GLP parties?
So, there is a sense that there is a status quo within these two parties that is somewhat liberal, is supporting of capitalism, which is not our agenda. We are a socialist party.
Okay. And then my other one, before I kind of dig into the platform, what is different between the new Workers' Party and then the recently disbanded United Left? Because I've seen several of the members have kind of crossed over from the farthest left party of yesterday to now what's aiming to be the farthest left party of today.
Right. So the main problem I saw with the United Left, which I saw with people like Trash and Polk, was a creeping sense of authoritarians who wanted to join the party. When I talked to Rika and Miguel about establishing this new party, one of our first consensuses was that we'll explicitly make this an anti-authoritarian party.
Okay.
Without Marxist-Leninists.
I see. So I wanted to dig into the platform a little bit, and broadly, like you mentioned, it's the farthest left of the existing parties. Generally looking in a socialist direction, there were a few points that I wanted to ask about specifically. Under the new economic system and government funding, you mentioned, or you and whoever was involved in writing the platform, both utilizing the existing land value taxes and then also property taxes. What is the mindset behind using both when generally the LVT is argued as a more growth-friendly version of the property tax?
Right. So there are two things that we care about when taxing, which is efficient taxation and taxation that produces equity. And we see a property taxation as one that produces more equity than a standard land value tax, which will tax a billionaire's plot of land the same as one of an old farmer.
Okay. There was another segment when you were discussing more civil issues. You mentioned redefining rights, which can leave room for holes for abuse. Can you discuss what you meant by that and what it might look like to rewrite some of these rights that have been recognized?
So, an amendment that guarantees equality. This means that we have to actively fight to make it that there is no gender pay gap, and there is no over-policing of black communities, and there and a general equality which starts between with more marginalized communities. So that is part of what we want to end, and it's I see it as a general problem of capitalism.
Okay, so essentially you're looking at filling in explicitly protections for groups that have historically not been included under the existing rights.
Correct.
Okay. The next point that I wanted to ask about, under education, you were looking at supporting public schools and public charter schools, and then abolishing private schools and the for-profit schools. Have you and the party considered any religious objections to the proposed abolition of private schools?
Right. So, in our opinion, public charter schools can contain a certain respect for religion, while we do not believe explicitly religious schools are the best for our children. If they want to, there are, for example, Sunday schools, which are more explicitly religious things.
Okay. And then the last point from the platform I wanted to ask you about, you explicitly said you want to abolish the United States Senate and make the House a quote, or I'm sorry, and establishing a quote proportional House. Are you and the party looking toward moving the United States in a more parliamentary system as opposed to our executive system that we have right now? Or what is the direction that you're thinking in terms of reforming American democracy?
So we, it's a tough balance to make between respecting proportionality and respecting regions. We believe that the Senate, which gives unproportional power to certain places, is undemocratic and just should be abolished. And we believe that the first past the post and even ranked voting can also be very undemocratic things. And now you could view it as a parliamentary, but I do not think we all of us support the idea of abolishing, for example, the presidency, which is not really a parliamentary thing. Mm-hmm. In this country, we did have a proportional house for a while in 2018, and it was pretty successful, I'd say.
Okay. So would this involve like an abolition of state districts and just take votes proportionally as each state? Would this be on the national level? How is this looking to be implemented?
So there's a bit of disagreement within our party. Some people say that it should be proportional statewide to respect regions. I think personally it should be a national proportional vote. We don't have a consensus.
Okay. Moving on from the platform, I guess we have an election coming up here very soon, of course. How is the new party looking in terms of membership and the types of candidates you're looking to field?
All right. We are a small party membership-wise, but we have a very strong active base. Mm-hmm. And we have sent we currently, I believe, five candidates, which is around half of our base already choose to run, and they are generally running on a socialist platform.
All right, and then last question that I have, are you planning on conducting joint primaries with the existing left coalition made up of the SDP and GLP Or are you guys going your own way, looking to get away from their more capitalist tendencies?
So I believe that in the current political climate, it is best to cooperate with the other leftist parties, particularly since I do not see a very strong presidential candidate of our own right now, which is why I have talked with GLP and SDP people about being in a joint primaries, but there will be more news about that in the coming weeks.
Okay. And this is kind of looking beyond maybe what you're considering right now as a party, but do you expect that that cooperation will exist in the long term, or is that more allowing yourselves to have electoral opportunities until your party can build up and split away?
And so long as there is a very conservative status quo of a one tax land value tax and a no education department, there has to be leftist cooperation in order to have the infrastructure needed for socialist change, which is why I believe leftist cooperation is necessary in the foreseeable time.
Okay. Did I miss anything? Is there anything you want to discuss while I have you here?
No, I think that is it.
All right. Well, thank you again for coming on, and good luck to you all coming up here in the elections.
Thank you very much, and have a nice day.
You as well. Draven, welcome to the Weekly.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to do it. Thanks for coming on. I want to start. So obviously, you've been in the headlines recently after a pretty quiet stretch in the political world with several high-profile indictments of former officials, and also you've announced your run as governor of Puerto Rico. How's the spotlight been treating you?
You know, there's been some contention about the indictments. You know, obviously, when you're dealing with criminal charges with high-profile politicians, that's to be expected. And, you know, there has been a degree of, of it being politicized. But, you know, from my point of view, you know, I'm not going to go after politicians for any political reasons. I'm simply, you know, making do where charges should have been filed, you know, months ago, but they were not. So, you know, I would just say generally the spotlight has been, you know, full of contention, and that's to be expected.
Okay. Let's start off first with the upcoming election. So you got your start as a member of the Libertarian Party, and you have since gone independent. Can you give a quick pitch for why you're running and what you will seek to accomplish if you get elected?
Yes. Thank you for that question. So I am seeking to run for governor because I worked closely with Governor Layla's administration on a couple different policy objectives. However, I have three main priorities for this run. And what I want to see changed in Puerto Rico is I want to see economic reform, I want to see medical reform, and I want to see educational reform. And as you'll see in the coming days during my campaign, I have listed out a plan to implement a UBI in Puerto Rico to help, you know, supplement the income of these low-income workers that have been, you know, without any jobs and without, you know, much economic stimulation. In addition, I will be introducing a new medical infrastructure that's been basically neglected by the federal government, with LoderCare taking it out completely. And in addition, I'll also be introducing new charter schools that will, you know, enrich the education that, you know, many public, public school students haven't been able to access. So those are my three main priorities.
All right. Thanks. Correct me if I'm wrong here. This will be your first political office if you win, setting aside the attorney general position. And governor's
That is correct.
Okay. Governors tend to have some electoral experience prior to taking that position. Do you feel that you're ready for that job?
I do. Now, I do believe, you know, that experience is, you know, foundational to a job such as governor. However, I've been working closely with Governor Layla's administration on a lot of different policy issues, ranging from healthcare, education, and even her introduce, you know, new electrical grid. So while I do not have, you know, the legislating experience that some others may have, I definitely do have the depth of insight in building these policy objectives and, you know, marketing, you know, solutions towards the Puerto Rican people.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned having a working relationship with Governor Layla. What do you see as your base of support as an independent without much of a voting record?
You know, I will say that in terms of my policies, they are a little more left-leaning, and that's primarily also why I left the Libertarian Party. Mm-hmm. As an independent, I do believe I have a little more flexibility because, you know, my main objective, again, is not to get into the politics of this, but to provide solutions for the Puerto Rican people. And I do feel that I'm able to accomplish that as an independent, you know, with left support.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go against your wishes here and get into the politics of this.
All right.
And I want to do that starting to shift toward talking about your busy tenure as DC Attorney General. But those two discussions have kind of blended in strange ways that have raised some eyebrows. One of your high-profile indictments was a former senator disguised jet who also happens to be your opponent in this gubernatorial race. Do you see a conflict of interest there?
So, you know, I will say, just to make the record clear, the indictment came before, I announced my candidacy for governor. And, you know, some may argue that the timing of this is very coincidental. However, you know, it was only maybe last week that I was confirmed as the DC Attorney General. And, you know, there was a stack of, you know, unrecognized police reports regarding these charges and other indictments that were filed as well. So, you know, I made it my first priority to make sure that, you know, those reports were recognized and, you know, handled in a timely manner. And, you know, the timing of it is very coincidental, but it's not politicized.
Okay. Do you have any intention of publicly recusing from your opponent's case?
I do not. You know, as the DC Attorney General, I have a responsibility to make sure that the justice is, you know, enforced, and I will be carrying out that duty. Irrespective of the political consequences, you know, that is exactly why I was confirmed.
Okay. You've taken heat for a number of these indictments, and as you mentioned, you came in with a number of them unacted on when you were confirmed into office. But particularly with the sitting president's alleged offenses happening before his election and having been litigated in the public at the time. Can you explain for me just the value in reaching back months for these cases?
Yes. So for the president's particular case, you know, his file, you know, the police report on that was stood out to me because, you know, at the time he was the minority leader and, you know, that doesn't exempt him through executive privilege or otherwise from, you know, attempting to pull a gun and aim it at someone. And, you know, the initial indictment, you know, only showed a certain amount of evidence, primarily because investigations are still being kept private. But I can say that, you know, further interviews and, you know, certain depositions have brought to light a lot more insight into this case. And I do believe that it's, you know, it's due fair justice that this needs to happen. And while the DOJ has published a memo from the Office of Legal Counsel that a president cannot be indicted, I do, you know, refute that point. And I did actually publish something on that, that, you know, it's not constitutionally sound and it's merely just a memo. And I am fully prepared to, you know, argue that case should it go to the Supreme Court.
Okay. How far back in history do you plan to search for possible indictments? And are there any other incidents that your office is considering at this time?
So, all the charges that we have done have been within the statute of limitations. And obviously, there's no static, number of years that the statute of limitations applies to. But we are reviewing on a case-by-case basis, potential charges and whether or not they reach into the statute of limitations. So all I can say right now, and this is a completely subjective answer, is depending on the prospective charges, it really depends on if it's within the statute of limitations. But I can say that if it is, no matter how long ago it was, we will be pursuing fair and due justice.
Okay. The final question I have prepared for you here, and then we can go on for as long as you like. The effort to arrest the president led to some conflict between your office and the Secret Service. Where does that conflict currently stand, and what is your next move in proceeding with that particular indictment?
Right. So that's a really good question. So in the initial indictment for the president, we did not obtain a warrant for his arrest. However, there was a certain set in the Code of District of Columbia that had allowed me to, warrant his arrest without a court warrant. And so when that was, denied publicly by the Secret Service, we realized that, we're not going to, engage in a civil with the Secret Service, over an arrest. And obviously, he is the president, so, we don't want to impact his ability to, serve office while this is ongoing. And, this is another thing as well. We're dealing in the realm of law. I'm not dealing in the realm of politics, with the White House or with anyone else, When it comes time for him to be heard by the court, either him or his defense will show up. And there is mechanisms in place within the judiciary to make sure that that happens. And that is what I'm relying on. So that's my bottom line.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's all I have for you. Did I miss anything? Is there anything you would like to discuss while I have you here?
Nothing for me.
All right, well, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good one.
Yep, you as well. Thank you again to former Congressman Mungai and D.C. Attorney General Draven for joining me today. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to get the latest episodes straight to your feed. The Weekly is a public record podcast.